Hello and welcome to the front page. There hasn't been much racing because of a cold, but there is plenty of hot topics to get stuck into. Racecourse attendances are down over a 4-year period. We have the Winter Million, or at least we had one day of it. And we've got Richie Forrestal talking about his column about the importance of looking after those in the sport. Joining me in the studio is Jonathan Harding, fresh from his first experience of Premier Racing at the weekend. How was it, Jonathan?
Yeah, good. Fantastic racing at Lingfield yesterday. You wouldn't necessarily know it was a Premier meeting in terms of branding. There was a logo on the race card and a little bit of explanation of the Premier concept in the race card, but it was mostly Winter Million branding around the track, as you can imagine. But we were lucky to have a Premier racehorse in Lompresse back, and really good performance from him.
Yeah, we'll discuss more on that in a minute. We'll also go to our Ireland editor, Richie. I touched on your column, we'll come to that a bit later on, but enjoy some of the action in Britain and Ireland over the weekend.
Yeah, good to get it on. Obviously, there was a lot of doubt. We lost Saturday. So good to see, you know, a couple of good horses in Alaho and Lompresse in particular getting to strut their stuff, as it were.
Yeah, looked pretty testing conditions yesterday over in Ireland. How have you been keeping through it?
Yeah, it's cleared now, thankfully, where I am here in West Cork. The sun is out. We're still getting the odd shower. But yesterday was horrendous, storm issue. You know, like a lot of people, plans were disrupted. I was meant to be at a pony gig with one of the kids, like, and that was called the night before. So fair play to Thurles for getting the show on the road. I was here in the morning thinking, you know, really, are they going to be able to get through this card? And, you know, they did so with aplomb, and obviously fair play to the lads involved and girls riding in those conditions and the grooms. It was horrendous, you know, so to get the show on and to get it all completed was a fair effort by all involved. So well done to them.
Indeed. Well, we touched on some of those races there, and you can watch those races back on the Racing Post app with our new race replays feature. Okay, and we will start with the Winter Million, my story, and looking back on what was a really good weekend of racing. There wasn't much of it, as we said. The first day of a Winter Million meeting got lost because of frozen ground. The Lightning Novices Chase was saved, and it was run on Sunday. But Ascot's Clarence House Chase card didn't go ahead. Bit of a mouthful. That'll be run at Cheltenham next Saturday as part of a Trials Day fixture. Let's start with a racing on the track. Jonathan, you were there. Lompresse as short as 8-1 after winning yesterday. Is he Britain's best chance of a Gold Cup winner?
The thing with Lompresse is he sort of has been a constant in the market by virtue of not running. A few others have blotted their copybook a little bit. I think Brave Man's Game has been running well but not quite winning. There's a few others in there that you would consider British contenders who maybe haven't quite reached the same level this season. So there was a big question hanging over him whether he retained that ability and whether we've been putting our hope in the right horse in his absence. And it wasn't a flawless display, I think that's fair to say. Charlie Deutsch saying he took a little bit of winding up in the early stages. He's very relaxed, which is probably the main reason that he stays as well as he does. But at the same time, it took a bit of getting him into gear. I think it was a good performance, certainly for a first run back after so long. He clearly retains all the ability that saw him win the Brown Advisory. He wasn't going to win the King George when he unseated. He was getting close to Brave Man's Game. I think Brave Man's Game, so you've got that bit of form that's a decent yardstick, obviously, with Brave Man's Game finishing second last year. And I think Protectorat is a very good level to test oneself against as well. I think it was a good performance from him at Cheltenham, giving away upwards of £15 in a handicap. That suggested to me that he was certainly around the same level that has seen him finish in the mix, really, in two Gold Cups. So he's beaten a very good horse reasonably comfortably on his first run back. Venetia Williams was typically coy, as she can be, afterwards, saying, look, I don't think he's going to improve a whole bundle, but you'd expect a little bit of improvement. 8-1, I think, is a fair price. I think there's a little bit in that price as well, certainly from an each-way perspective. Will he trouble a Galopin Deschamps if he turns up in the sort of form he did last year? Probably not, but it's nice to have a single-figure Gold Cup contender trained in Britain, and he's only going the right way based on yesterday.
Yeah, impressive enough performance, I'd agree with you. If I was to say who's the most likely Gold Cup winner from Britain, I would say the enigmatic Shishkin. I know it's a bizarre shout, but I've just... The horse is so classy, and I just think he loved the Gold Cup trip. I'm excited about his... I'm mad, I'm crazy, I know, but I'm excited to see him. Richie, is it going to go back to Ireland Gallop and Deschamps again, Le Homme Press? Was he as impressive as Jonathan Foote?
Yeah, look, I love the horse as an individual. He's a fabulous horse. I think we all enjoyed the way he won at Cheltenham a couple of years ago. He's still relatively unexposed. I think he's only run 9 times over fences. You know, he's obviously had a problem or two along the way. Very honest horse, you know. You love that he's an unusual looking horse, and he seems to have quite a small head. But I don't think he's a small horse. But he gives you his all the time, and he's a very, very neat, nimble jumper. Yesterday, as Jonathan touched upon, you know, he didn't appear to be cherry ripe. You know, he had to be made to go after Protectorate. Harry Skelton was trying to press on as hard as he could, and Charlie Deutsch had to chase him to keep tabs on him. But then he kind of got into his groove, and he's found his rhythm, and he went away and he won quite well. But look, Protectorate is a fairly long way off winning a Gold Cup with the last couple of years. I think he was 15 odd lengths behind Gallop and Deschamps last year. Lompress was receiving £5 from him yesterday and beat him a couple of lengths. He's got a fair old bridge to gap. Now, a bit of soft ground would help, but you're talking about Gallop and Deschamps at his peak, 178, I think, 180 ultimately, maybe you could see him getting to. Then you've got Faster Slow, you've got Jerry Calom. You know, the bar is fairly high. It's not out of this realm. I actually think he would be Britain's best chance. I'd prefer him to Shishkin. But, you know, he's got to keep improving. It'll be interesting to see if they decide to run him again. He's still like going left-handed. So they might skip Ascot, who knows. It'll be interesting to see what they decide to do. But, as I say, I'm mad about the horse, but whether he'll be up to quite winning a Gold Cup if all the others turn up or on form, you know, maybe not.
No, that's true. I think the plan for Shishkin is to go to the Denman Tate at Newbury next. And just while we've got you, Rich, I mean, not long to go until the Dublin Racing Festival, and we've got all those big names there. What's the mood like in Ireland? Are they confident ahead of what is going to be a big meeting, and then going on to Cheltenham? Is all good and well with the Mullins camp, the Ellens camp, all of those big stables?
Yeah, I think so. Look, we're going to find out a lot over the next few days, I'd imagine. I was even thinking about this earlier, you know, what kind of shape is the Irish Gold Cup going to take? We don't really know. They're all maybe looking at each other to see what each one is going to do before they make a decision. Willie Mullins hasn't ruled out Gallop and Deschamps, I don't think. You know, it's an option. He took in Christmas. Will he run him a third time before Cheltenham? That'll be interesting. Martin Brazel hasn't seemed to decide what he's going to do with Faster Slow. He has the option of the 2-miler. We don't know if Jerry Calom will run. So, you know, like a lot of the races over that weekend, plenty of it's still up in the air. We'll find out a bit more this week, you'd imagine. But it's always great. Meeting over the last few years, it's really kind of embedded its place in the season, and I'm sure it'll be hugely informative again.
Yeah, so we don't know about that, but what we do know is that the Winter Million will be staged at Windsor in 2024-2025. Racing returns to Windsor this year after a 20-year break in December. A month later, it will have the 2 days from the Winter Million, and that will tie in with Ascot's card on Saturday as Clarence House Chase. They're hoping to build up the crowd, use Ascot almost as a platform to have people across all 3 days. There'll be availability for a 3-day change. Jonathan, you were talking to trainers yesterday about this decision. We've not had racing yet at Windsor, but yet we've already got a big meeting there. It seems strange, but the move is really well supported.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of love for it. Certainly from Nicky Henderson's probably been the most vocal supporter of it. As he told me yesterday, he's one of the few trainers who's old enough to actually remember jump racing regularly at Windsor, and he was saying that he's played a bit of a part in that, in taking John Bonn and a few horses over there to try and work out the best configuration, the best line, and he seems to think it'll be a really good fit in the calendar. I think just on the Winter Million more broadly, I've often found January to March in Britain a little bit dry, a little bit meh compared to Ireland.
Yeah.
And I think the Winter Million has been a fairly disruptive introduction, but I think a positive one. And you can see...
Disruptive because of the weather.
Well, yeah, that. And I think it's secured a really important position in the calendar in that it is a good launch pad for Cheltenham now. The flip side of that is it will be more susceptible to poor weather conditions than other meetings. I think the switch to Windsor will make it less susceptible, and I think Windsor generally would fare a little bit better than Lingfield in those cold conditions. That seems to be the way of thinking anyway. And the link up with Ascot seems really positive as well. I mean, there's a lot of arena, well, Martin Cruddas' interview, which we discussed on this show, there's a lot of we're not going to sort of open our books, and maybe a little bit of competition between the race courses and who's willing to be transparent, who isn't. So it's nice to see a collaboration with a track like Ascot, and I think it fits well in the programme. And you have a horse like Lompress turning up at Lingfield. It's clearly getting the right calibre of horses there as well and being well supported. So positive initiative, and hopefully the link up with Ascot and the switch to Windsor will take it to another level again next year.
Yeah, and you, also we don't know come 2025 what the state of Premier Racing will be, but it's a good concept of joining those together and building attendances that way, and almost using the Premier Racing platform to try and sell it. So it'd be interesting how it goes down next year. You touched on that interview with Martin Cruddas. It of course goes back to his interview with our industry editor Bill Barber, where he said the focus on media rights as an income stream is as a fixation on it was economically illiterate, was his words. He's spoken about this to ITV, to Sky Sports Racing yesterday. He's essentially, his point is that he doesn't want to disclose it. It comes despite the BHA's BHA boss Julie Harrington saying that there needs to be greater transparency on media rights, and the Jockey Club have the BHA boss Julie Harrington said it needs to be addressed. The Jockey Club say it needs greater transparency. And it seems like there's going to be no movement from Martin Cruddas on this. The ARC do not want to give this away, almost saying that giving it away is a silly thing to do because they want to be in control of how they use their money.
Yeah, and you can see with your head, you can understand why a major racecourse group wouldn't want to give away commercially sensitive information to rivals or show their hand, as it were. And I think if everything was going swimmingly in British racing and everyone was getting their slice of the pie and prize money was good and attendances were good, you'd probably say, OK, well, everyone do your own thing and we're not that worried about it. But my take on it would be that we almost do need to be on a war footing now. The markers are generally going the wrong way, although we'll touch on it. There's been a slight levelling off of attendances, which is a positive, a small positive. I think the conversations are ongoing between the Thoroughbred Group and the Jockey Club and the major independents. They have slightly different business models, perhaps, that rely more on attendances and less on media rights. So Arena Racing Company is a completely different company to the Jockey Club. So you can understand why they're a little bit reserved, perhaps. But it'll be an interesting one to follow, I think, over the coming months. But as far as this week goes, Arena Racing Company's put its money where its mouth is with the Winter Million and been rewarded. So, it's certainly a topic, I think, that's going to be rumbling on for many weeks to come.
Yeah, and it's important, I think, as well to address that not only are we talking about how much money is being made, it's about trying to work out how we can develop that further, how you can bring more money in, and projects like Premier Racing. We've obviously got affordability checks, which has a huge impact on the money that racecourses have and are able to put into prize money. So his interview also quite clearly says that it needs investment in things like Premier Racing, so that, yeah, that pool of money, regardless of how much they are deciding to put in, and that's their own decision to make, is what he's saying, there needs to be more work to make sure that pool of money is bigger.
And my view has always been that truth never hurts an honest cause, and I just think when you don't disclose information, and we're not saying completely open the books, but disclose some information, you are inviting yourself, or you are encouraging that mistrust between the participants and the racecourses, and it was ever thus. But if it's allowed to fester, it will occasionally come out, as it has now with pushing for it. So hopefully, I know the Thoroughbred Group and the NTF are doing some good work, and the racecourses generally, everyone's broadly singing from the same hymn sheet, but not every business has the same model, so it's going to take a little bit of diplomacy, I think, to get this one solved.
It wouldn't be racing if people all agreed with each other.
It certainly wouldn't, no. It would be no fun for anyone.
The model for prize money is extremely different in Ireland, Richie. Have you had an opinion on what is happening over here, and is there anything we could learn from perhaps how different it is over in Ireland?
I don't know. Look, I suppose there is a whole discussion here about how the media rights money has kind of dictated the way the sport and the industry has gone over the last 20 or so years. And that's all part of it. You know, there are different elements to it, obviously. But, you know, we've here, in Ireland, like, for example, we've had a 30% increase in fixtures in the last 20 years. You don't see the same upturn in attendances or anything like that. So, I mean, there doesn't seem to be any link between the amount of fixtures that are put on and the growing of the sport and its appeal. So, you know, it's all, as we all know, it's shrouded in a bit of mystery. Everyone would like to know a bit more. I can see what Crudas is saying about not taking the media rights money in isolation. But there is a whole discussion here to be had about why we're putting fixtures on, you know, if we're doing it ultimately just to generate betting revenue and media rights, then it's not the right reason to do so. And, there's an element of that about the Premier Racing concept. They say it's to promote the high-class racing. We haven't really seen an awful lot of that over the last few weeks, have we, since it's come in? And yet we have Sunday evening racing and Saturday morning racing. Let's be honest about it. There's only one reason that kind of thing is on, and it's to generate more betting on the sport and hence improve the levy and so on. So media rights and all that goes with it, it's a big animal, and you know, we're only touching tip of the iceberg here, really.
Yeah, that's all true, Richie. It's worth saying as well that the Sunday racing is a trial, so we'll see what happens with that. But the media rights issue, it's certainly going to be one that rumbles on for the next few weeks. We discussed Shishkin, we discussed Le Hans Press, but perhaps we can see you at the Cheltenham Festival if you fancy winning some tickets. Okay, on to story two. And Jonathan, you've had a look at racecourse attendances from 2023.
Yeah, so the Racecourse Association released its figures for last year and sold them as a bit of a positive, which I think it's fair to say they were. An average attendance of 3,394, which is an increase of 1.43% on 2022, while the total figure, quite miraculously, was almost exactly the same as last year. I'm not entirely sure how that's happened, but it's a wonderful coincidence. The major festivals have stood up reasonably well, certainly in the summer. The Cambridgeshire had a 21.6% increase. Positive news again, summer jumping. Year-on-year increase in August, 25% in terms of attendances. So really, you would say positive, reading the press release. But, and my New Year's resolution was to be less cynical, but compared to 2019, it is massively down. 5.62 million people attended racecourses in 2019 versus 4.83 in 2023. And I take 2019 as the last sort of representative year, while the average was also down from 3,898. Now, comparing years is difficult because there's a million factors, and the Racecourse Association would quite rightly point to many reasons why this is the case. And I don't want to be too quick to completely dismiss this because it's actually important. It has stemmed a downward spiral. The results for the second half of the year in terms of attendances have been broadly positive, and racecourses should be commended for that. I suppose my argument would be now we're on a slightly surer footing, now things are starting to go very marginally back in the right direction. What can racecourses be doing in 2024 to improve that experience? And for me, I still think they're getting so many of the basics wrong. Things such as, you know, people not being allowed to bring picnics into the racecourse and then being charged a fortune for what I would say is mostly quite average food. It might be a little bit unfairly, and obviously not all racecourses are the same, but little simple things like that to get more people through the door. I think with this Premier initiative needs to come a complete refocus on what is being offered to racegoers. A lot of talk about betting turnover, a lot of talk about all these things, and there's various different revenue streams. But for me, the sport does live or die on people actually going to see it. Once you give up on that, you've given up on the sport. So I just think take this as a positive and try and think about where it can go next. And I think there's a lot of things that can be done.
Yeah, interesting points. I live in Cheltenham, so a lot of my world revolves around the Cheltenham Festival, as I'm sure many of our viewers at home. The crowd was significantly down last year, and I have quite a lot of conversations with people who say, I love the Cheltenham Festival, but I'm only going to do 2 days this year. I'm only going to do 1 day this year. I'm not going to go at all because it costs too much, and I don't like the busyness of the crowds and the traffic. It's the small things really have such a big impact on racegoers, and I think you're right to pick out that something as simple as I can't take my own food in, that will have a huge impact, and that first impression may say, you know what, I might not go racing again, and that's such a huge thing. The only other point I would make is that there's... the attendance is comparative from last year. We are living through a cost of living crisis, so perhaps we've done well. But this is the time now for action, because people's leisure money is in a better place than it was at this point last year. So it is the time for racecourses to act, because every other leisure industry will be doing the same thing.
And I still believe that going racing is actually reasonably good value if it's compared to... I mean, in the sense of getting through the gate is actually relatively good value compared to other sports. And with the just an example of taking food in, obviously probably not at the Cheltenham Festival, you know, just like you wouldn't go and watch Arsenal at the weekend and be able to take a packed lunch with you. It's not how it works. That's not how these businesses operate, nor should it be. But midweek meetings, I think you're sort of making a rod for your own back, charging too much for those and putting all sorts of prohibitive measures in place. I just want to see a little bit more invention. And Nevin Truesdale, to be fair, at the Jockey Club, just as another example, he's saying that they want to improve the food offering. Quite what that means, I don't know, but at least it's on the radar. And again, I'm forever hearing people singing York's praises, but that would be an example of a track that does really get the racecourse experience right and is rewarded for it. So, yeah, interesting times in terms of attendances.
Yeah, I'd add Windsor to the list. Really good racecourse, and it'd be interesting to see how that all changes for the Winter Million and how different it is. But Monday nights at Windsor is really well done. Richie, what can we learn from Ireland? I mean, racecourse experience over here is often talked about. We highlighted in the Racing Post the series we had, looking at all the racecourse prices index, about what racing was like and the differences between Ireland and Britain. I mean, how does the racecourse experience differ? And is there anything from Ireland that we could learn for our own race day experience?
I don't know. Look, I think there's probably pros and cons on both sides of it. Some things are done better in Britain and some things are done better in Ireland, possibly. I'd agree with a lot of what you say there. Notwithstanding the attendances at Cheltenham last year, generally festivalisation, if you like, if that's a new word, is something that has taken hold and set in, and you can see that in a lot of the figures. There's a lot of targeting of festivals now. Overall attendances have struggled over the last 10 years. You know, I think pre-pandemic it was around 1.3 million. In Ireland, it's down to, in the last full year of figures, 2022. We don't have the full year for 2023 yet. It was around 1.2 million. So, you know, the average has dropped as well. I think in the last 10 years, the number of fixtures has grown by around 10%, and the average turning up at these meetings has dropped by around 7%. So, you know, there's very little correlation there. What do they do? The first thing they should always do is put on a better product. And putting on extra fixtures doesn't necessarily equate to putting on a better product. We want better, more competitive racing. And I think once you have that, you have a better chance of attracting people to these meetings. The tail wags the horse a little bit. We've discussed that already. The fact that, you know, these fixtures are being put on, the horse population isn't necessarily there. The spread of competition isn't necessarily there. So you've got to go back to basics and make sure the product you're putting on is up to scratch, first of all. And then you look after people when you get them in. I've always said, if I go to a football match or a hurling match, or you guys go to a rugby match or a football match or whatever there, you pay in the gate, and that's more or less the last fee you pay of your day out. You go racing, you pay in the gate. It's basically the first cost of your day. You then have to pay for food, drink, you know, have a bet, whatever else you're doing in the track. So cost is one thing, and I've always wondered why the way the sport has gone these days, with so much of it available online to watch on streaming devices and all the rest of it, you know, why not at the routine Monday to Friday meetings, if you like, why not reduce the attendance fee down to a kind of a token fee of a fiver or whatever, and just try and get people to come in. You'd get more casual people in for a look, I suspect, and you might well keep them if they were taken by it. You know, it's just, it's kind of depressing to go to some of these midweek meetings a lot of the time. And it's the same in Britain, I know. Like, you know, they're just fairly desolate. So little things like that maybe could help, but it's the overall graph over the past 10, 20 years is only going one way in terms of attendances. So it's going to be a big job to try and stop that, to halt that and send it in the other direction. The move to festivalization is something that they're trying, and obviously Britain is trying the premierization, which is another strand of that. But it's difficult these days, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, interesting you say that, and I completely agree with your point about the experience of those midweek meetings. I always think from perspective of an owner, if you're a new owner to the sport or you're a part of the syndicate, to have the moment you've bought into, the moment it's all been waited for, to have a winner and there's three or four people around the parade ring,
yeah,
it does spoil the sort of the special moment almost, and it doesn't make it seem as special as you perhaps imagined it to be, which is exactly why people would invest in this sport. And the final point from the release was regarding abandonments. Really interesting to see that abandonments were up 40% from 2022, a 69% increase in the last quarter as well, so particularly affected by rain and frost and frozen weather. It's another sign of Jonathan climate change is going to be a real sort of issue for the sport in years to come, with things like rain and frost and things like that. Weather is one thing, but this is a sign that this is an issue that's going to become more and more prevalent across the sport.
Yeah, I think racing's generally been a little bit slow in the uptake of various things in terms of future proofing itself, but it seems to be fairly aware of the potential impact of more extreme weather. And that's both rain and heat, of course. There's not a lot more to add than that, really, apart from just being aware of it and ensuring that measures are taken to sort of allow for it. I think they need to perhaps look at how agile they are in moving fixtures, and they're quite good at saving the big races, quite importantly, when they fit into the pattern. I realise it's not a simple swap. We had David Jennings suggesting that the money should be found somewhere to kind of keep prize money at the same level, but I think that's ripe for a look, kind of how we deal with these, particularly the high profile cancellations, but also the other ones. Doing a reasonably good job, I'd say, so far, certainly in the last week or so, but there's always space for improvement there.
Yeah, as you say, it's great that we've got so many other big races from the weekend saved that we run next week. Okay, we'll come on to the third story, and Richie, it comes following your excellent column during last week.
Yeah, look, to recap, I suppose Graham Lee had a nasty incident coming out of the stalls in November. I don't know exactly what happened, to be honest. I don't think the video has been shown, thankfully. But, you know, I must say, I didn't write about it at the time. I struggled to get my head around it. I would have spoken to some of our colleagues from the weigh room in those days, and we were all struggling to you know, process it a little bit, what had happened. He has cervical fractures, obviously very serious, up in his neck. And I didn't write about it, as I say. And then recently we learned about Richard Sparky Bevis having an accident on his farm at home last weekend. And again, very serious injury, fractured skull, in an induced coma. You know, it's two better lads you couldn't meet. Two very pleasant and chipper kind of guys, you know, I mentioned in the column about Graham, like he if you approach Graham or if you were walking towards him, having not seen him for a short while, say, or a long while, the first thing he'd say to you is, "Jez, you're riding well," or "Jez, you're writing well," and he'd put you at ease. That's the kind of fella he was, or he is, I beg your pardon. You know, Richard Bevis is the same, you know, very upbeat, pleasant kind of guy. And the hours that these guys will put in and the sacrifices that they make to keep the show on the road, it's kind of hard to convey. You know, there's a lot of personal cost involved in what they do, jockeys and staff and so on. Richard Bevis obviously operating as Nigel Twiston Davies' assistant for the last 20 years. And he did train, again, I mentioned this in the column, he trained for a short while. And 25 years ago, I actually rode his first winner for him at Carlisle on a fairly nondescript afternoon up at Carlisle, a horse called Court Ordeal. And just, you know, they're both in very serious predicaments. It's going to be a long haul back for them. You know, and as you know, their children have set up their respective fundraising pages, respective children, I should say, have set up fundraising pages. There's about 250,000 cumulatively raised at the moment. you'd like to see that keep going up, because they're going to need it, and they're going to need a lot of support and rehab, you know, to get back going. There's a lot involved in I suppose catering for people with these sort of injuries, put it that way, as they go forward. So I just hope that, you know, people read the column and that they will donate a few bob. If everyone puts something in, it'll all add up and it will help their causes. As I say, two great fellas, two real hard workers, two upbeat kind of guys. And I suppose the nature of it, you know, they're both late 40s, early 50s. They've lived this game all their lives, you know, and you're always on the edge. You exist on the edge in this game. And for something as kind of innocuous as Graham's to happen, coming out of the stalls at Newcastle, this is a guy who rode a Grand National winner and rode over jumps for 20 years. You know, it's hard to reconcile. And you've the same with Richard, you know, a guy who's been riding out all his life, you know, at the cold face of the game. You know, he's had a random incident with a machine of some sort that's left him in a very bad condition. So it's hard to stomach. I can't only imagine what it's like for their families to cope with. So I just hope people will throw a few bob to the cause and you know, support them in any way we can.
Yeah, absolutely. Completely agree with you there, Richie. I think what events like this unfortunately do highlight is the risks involved in the sport. And sometimes, despite all the advertising and all the work that Indy Jockeys Fund do and other racing charities, sometimes it does take a real moment of like this to sit back and reflect. And we certainly wish our very best to the two respective families of Graham Lee and Richard Sparky Bevis.
And just before you finish up on that, James, I would like to just say, actually, I got a lovely message from Graham the other evening, a voice message. So despite his predicament, you know, he was in as good a spirit as you could imagine. And it was lovely to hear from him. So, you know, I think that message is maybe worth getting out there to people, you know, that he's in as good a spirit as you could imagine.
That's good. And was the message following on from your column?
Yes. Yeah, he got in touch on Thursday night, yeah.
Perfect. Jonathan, it's a reminder, isn't it, of how serious this sport is sometimes. It's an unfortunate reminder, as I said.
It is, and look, the three of us spend a lot of time asking difficult questions and talking about the challenges that the sport faces, but when stuff like this happens, I can think of no other sport that rallies behind its own in the same way, quite rightly. Two fantastic guys who I don't know personally, but just from reading Richie's column and hearing all the tributes and testaments to those two guys, hoping for a speedy recovery for both of them.
Okay, so that leaves me the decision of deciding what will go on the front page. And I think given the importance and the significance of the two jockeys, as discussed there by Richard Sparky Bevis and, of course, Graham Lee, I think that deserves to be on our front page. Richie, it was a really moving column, wasn't it? And it's great to see so many donations go to the two pages.
The column was written to raise awareness and raise funding, and I hope it's achieved that. And it is, you know, our columns are normally for members behind the paywall. This one isn't for obvious reasons.
Thank you to our two guests, Jonathan and Richard, over in Ireland. Join us next week for another episode of The Front Page.